Previously in A Fond Kiss by Alice Dale, Craig Stebbings, a young fighter pilot, was shot down over the English Channel, suffering severe burns causing trauma, which has affected his speech. His mother, Philippa Stebbings, decided to travel from Glasgow to Dover to visit him, in spite of her husband's warnings about travel in wartime.
David Mackey, the second head, was the one who dealt with any staff problems. He was a kindly man who admired Philippa enormously, both as a teacher and a person of strong character, and especially for her empathy with every student she taught. Secretly, he was strongly attracted to her, but advances to a member of staff, let alone a married woman, were out of the question. He was busy with paperwork when the tap came on his door.
Come.
Without looking up. He heard the door open and close quietly. I'm sorry to disturb you, Mr. Mackey.
Not at all.
And the pen went down immediately he recognised the voice.
Oh, what can I do for you, Philippa?
She couldn't help noticing the use of her first name, but she was not tempted to reciprocate. Well, there is something I hope you can do for me, Mr. Mackey. Having been offered a seat with a gesture of his hand, she sat down and continued. It's about my son. She handed over the letter that was causing her so much offence. David knew Craig had been shot down, but having heard nothing since, hadn't dared to ask if there had been any further news. However, he was interested to see that this letter came from Buckland Casualty Hospital, Dover. And, having read the first paragraph dealing with Craig's injuries, he looked up and spoke with a smile he hoped would cheer her up.
Well, it's better than the telegram telling you he was missing. I suppose we should be grateful he survived, and at least the burns heal eventually.
That's not what I'm concerned about. Read the second paragraph.
Oh, it's only a necessary question, Philippa.
He would never have admitted the pleasure he felt when saying her name.
Has he had any speech defects previously?
Certainly not, she retorted as though he had made an accusation. But he was not fazed.
Well, that's all they're asking. Just reply in the negative.
I want to do more than that. I want to see him, see how bad these burns are, and make sure they know that his speech has always been as clear as a bell, like his singing.
Now, I remember you telling me what a good voice he has. But, if my memory serves me right, you couldn't persuade him to sing for us at the school concert.
He's always been too shy to sing in public, she said fondly, now quite calm. He was happy to keep her talking. She was such a lovely woman. Her dark hair always had a gloss that made him want to touch it. And her pale grey eyes created such a distinct contrast. She managed to look taller than her 5'3" by wearing high heels and always holding herself erect, giving the appearance of calm self-control. He also admired her low-key voice. She wore a muted plaid skirt with a soft green sweater that emphasised her slim but rounded figure.
She must have been very young.
Her records showed her to be 42, but she looked younger than that. He had to stop thinking about her and listen to what she was saying. So, would it be possible for me to take a few days off while I have this very good student on her teaching prac? I've been really impressed with her lessons she's taken so far. Of course, I'd set up all the necessary lessons for her. Then, shyly, she added, "To be honest, I did that this afternoon. Was that presumptuous of me?" Now she looked even younger, quite unaware she resembled a little girl asking for an ice cream cone. Her mission was accomplished.
When were you thinking of going?
On the next available train, whenever that is. I'll have to go down to the station and see if I can get a ticket to London, or better still, right through to Dover. Stan thinks I'm daft, but I simply must see my son and find out what they mean by this speech defect. Her courage made David Mackey admire her even more, and of course he gave her his permission.
and take as much time as you need.
She made her way straight to Central Station that same day after school and purchased a return ticket from Glasgow to London. She was told there was a train the next morning at 10 a.m, but no specific seats could be booked, and she'd have to take her chances with a Dover connection. Philippa made sure she arrived an hour before departure time. To her amazement and horror, the queue stretched from Platform 1 to the station entrance on Gordon Street, mostly filled with servicemen returning from leave. She had to join the queue, and during the long wait it occurred to her that she should have packed some kind of picnic, as a restaurant car or even a snack bar on the train was unlikely in these days of rationing. Her back and feet were aching by the time she reached the barrier. "Sorry, hen," said far too cheerfully by the ticket collector. "You'll no be on that in the day. It's full as a walk." "When's the next one?" "Can't be sure, hen. The train's a sort of buggery, the new." Philippa, full of anger and frustration, was about to turn away when she noticed a soldier on the platform waving goodbye to someone behind her. Without turning to see the recipient of the wave, she cried out, "Oh, look, that's my son waving me on. He must have found a seat for me." And she barged past the ticket collector before he could stop her, pretending to wave to the complete stranger who was now opening a door. She had never run so fast since she had won the 100-yard sprint on sports day at school. The soldier politely held the door open and jumped in after her as the guard blew his whistle, waved his flag, and the train began to move.
"You can fairly shove for a woman of your age,"
he quipped. "I'd have preferred if you'd left out the second bit," she laughed back.
"Okay, then. You can run like a gazelle. Is that better?"
"Much better." Offering his hand, the soldier said,
"By the way, I'm Steve."
"And I'm Philippa," she returned as she grasped his hand.
"Well, we'll be lucky if we can find a seat."
"I don't care. I'm just glad I made it." And she heaved a big sigh of relief. But she did care 3 hours later, when she was still standing in the corridor, holding on to the brass bar across the window and swaying with the movement of the train. She was glad of his company, especially as she had proved right about the lack of any food on board, with no chance of sitting down in a restaurant car. At least he was helping her to pass the time with his jolly personality and telling her light-hearted stories. They swapped cigarettes and started exchanging information about themselves. She explained the reason for her journey, and he said he was a gunner, returning after a week's leave. He said his mother had complained he spent more time with his girlfriend than with the family. What did she expect? Philippa sympathized. The mention of his mother prompted her to admit to her deception to get on the train because of her desperation to see her son. "I hope you didn't take offense at me making you my fictitious son." With a loud guffaw, Steve said,
"Well, I must admit, I wondered why you were waving to me while I was waving goodbye to my girlfriend."
From then on, enjoying the joke, he insisted on calling her mother. And when it became mummy, they both burst out laughing. Just as the door of the compartment behind them slid open and a sailor stepped out.
"Quick,"
said Steve, pushing her forward. "But what if he comes..."
"Oh, never mind, I'll deal with him. He should have offered you his seat long ago, mummy."
She stumbled through the door and fell heavily onto the vacated seat. and deal with him he did. Philippa watched the argument in the corridor when the sailor returned. Then he looked in at her, and she smiled so guiltily. He turned to Steve with a shrug and threw up his hands with a smile that said, "I suppose I'm beaten." Steve offered him a cigarette, and soon they were swapping stories about their lives in the forces, while the seat stealer gradually nodded off into a deep sleep of relief.
Thank you.